Brokering success demands a battle-ready strategy. TIE TMS equips brokers with the ultimate battle station for conquering a tough market. With TIE, brokers gain access to a comprehensive platform where rate intelligence and quote history coverage on a single screen. Revolutionize the way your brokers perform by giving them a competitive advantage with TIE TMS. For more info, visit tiesoftware.com/battlestation. Welcome back to another edition of Check Call. Today we are getting into our spring market update, and we are welcoming our absolute favorite market expert update guru. Yeah, I like that title. I'm using it moving forward. We are welcoming David Spencer, the Vice President of Market Intelligence at Arrive Logistics. Welcome back, David.
Thanks, Mary. It's great to be back, even after we had a couple other Arrive guests join the show.
I mean, look, we gotta spread the Arrive love, casually flex on everyone as to Arrive's doing things in Mexico and, you know, really kind of taking over North America for honestly, I'm going to say the better.
You know, we're doing some cool things. I mean, probably more interesting than what the freight market's been up to the last couple of months, but there's some changes I think that we're noticing out there. I think we'll touch on in the conversation today.
I mean, I would hope Arrive is slightly more exciting than the freight market because freight market hasn't been that exciting, if I'm being honest. But jumping right into it, spring has sprung, as everyone's allergies can attest. But over the past few months, kind of what have we seen come out of the van and reefer market? Have we seen, because I was on vacation for a little bit and I came back and everything was kind of different. So what have we left winter behind, and are we on the greener pasture side of the van and reefer market?
Well, we're certainly seeing normal seasonality as we move into the spring here. I think that's definitely been pretty apparent. Really since we saw in February, the market kind of regressed back down to more typical patterns after that winter weather. We saw, elevated spot pricing in January. That's the most excitement we've had this year is really that spot activity in January. And then a little bit of volatility as we got into the last month of last week of the first quarter in March. But, as we've moved into April, I think what we're seeing out there is that typical seasonal softness this time of year in sort of that lull between produce season and summer peak season, right? I think looking ahead here, which we'll definitely dive into more later, but, not expecting any real major blips until, mid-May here. And really that seasonal softness has been, on the demand side and that persistent capacity, the storyline here that so far this year.
I personally would like to know, in your great crystal ball over there, is there still a big hope for kind of the middle of summer, 4th of July, to bring some much needed life back into the spot market? Do you still see that as a potential, or is that maybe not as soon as the 4th of July holiday?
Yeah, I would say in most years, what to expect is that period between DOT week and mid-May, assuming it happens, and July 4th, you're going to see some disruption out there from summer peak season. Spot market volatility is what you'd expect. And on a year-over-year basis, I think if you were to kind of quantify both the supply and demand components as up or down, demand we're looking at relatively stable on a year-over-year basis. And there's been some attrition on the capacity side, albeit much slower than in prior market cycles. And so with slightly less capacity and pretty stable demand, I think what we're looking at is a little bit more volatility in the spot market during that period. I think the question is what do we see after July 4th? Do we see those conditions continue? And I think our answer right now is no, we don't think that they're going to be a sustained disruption. We're looking at a blip more so than a sustained disrupted environment on the contract side of things. We don't expect disrupted routing guides to really persist, significantly beyond that range. But, a lot of things can happen. We've all been wrong before. But right now, that's what all indicators point to for us.
I mean, look, my cloudy crystal ball over here had the middle of summer serving as a blip as well. But like, I just want to be wrong sometimes. Sometimes I want that I want that strong end to a summer that kicks off back to school and takes us right into peak season. And, you know, we don't have to sit there and go, well, you know, shippers can still expect carriers to pick up on time and honor their routing guides. And, you know, it's just going to be a nice, calm, quiet time, which, you know, I'm good with. I don't necessarily need like 2020 action, but I'll take like a little bit of a raise in the spot market and just like a little bit more excitement versus just like, oh, regionally, we're going to see maybe some capacity constraints as we kind of get into produce season. But I was secretly hoping that there was something more exciting on the horizon.
I mean, it's a challenging time for carriers out there. I think, you know, one of the anecdotes that we're hearing consistently, and especially as you see Q1 earnings reports coming in and the commentary from the larger asset carriers, is that shippers are certainly looking for continued, you know, downward movement on contract rates this year in Q1 for awards going live. And what you're starting to see is these large asset carriers, you know, saying no, finally, that we can't go much lower. And, you know, this is really the bottoming of the cycle when you start to get to that point where, you know, operating costs and current rate environment are starting to come in line with each other and maybe operating costs slightly above in some cases, depending on the carrier. You know, and that's where you start to see that pushback and that potential for upward movement. Really, the indicators we're looking at that are pointing to not really an imminent flip are the fact that spot and contract rates still have a decently large gap between the two. And then on top of that, you know, we haven't really seen that tender rejection volatility jump up above, you know, 10%, especially on the van side, which is where historically we've really seen those market flips. So, you know, it's been a tough environment, but I think what we're starting to see now is that we are strongly of the belief that we don't expect rates to fall much further from where they're at today.
So I guess since we have nowhere else for them to fall, you did mention that the gap between spot and contract rates was widening. Do you see it kind of widening more as the summer goes on, or do you kind of see it shrinking as we come to the end of the summer? What are we looking at between that spread?
Well, typically the spot rate is what moves more than the contract rate. So as we get into the summer months, I definitely expect, you know, as that spot rate increases, you know, a little bit more abruptly, that's going to create a closing of that gap between spot and contract. And that's certainly going to create an environment where in some cases you will see disrupted routing guides for a few weeks, you know, as that spot demand surges in a lot of cases, bottled beverage season, lawn and garden, anything that you might typically want for outdoors, especially up there in the northern part of the country, right? That's all going to be moving in that time frame. And that demand, you know, is only going to be limited, right? But, you know, that spike in spot rates is going to close that gap as we get in the summer and test some of these routing guides. But like I said, I think as we get into the middle of the latter part of July, you see spot rates ease and you see that gap widen again. And the question is over time, are we seeing that average gap close? And I do believe that to be the case. But the event that we believe would be required to close that gap nationwide just seems too large and too out of reach at this point.
So do you, will there be cheering in the streets when that gap closes to basically be equal? Or do you think that probably will not likely happen this year, that spot and contract rates take that gap and bring it to this close together?
Well, you know, I heard somebody say this recently, but the most anticipated spot market flip in history is this one we're approaching. And so there's going to be a lot of hype as we see that gap close and as we see that spot market volatility. But keeping a cool level head around really where we're at in the cycle and is this a sustained or lasting disruption or not is something that we're preaching, you know, to the shippers and carriers out there, not to get too excited by blips in the market, but, you know, paying attention to what really is going on out there and what really the data is telling us about whether or not we're in this flipped market or if we're just seeing some short-term disruption. And so I think you're going to see, you know, some of the talking heads pointing out that the, you know, market is flipping and others kind of holding their ground that it's not. And, And certainly we won't know for sure until we get to mid-July. But my guess is that we'll see that volatility. We'll see that sort of push and pull from the experts out there. But I think as we get back into the later part of the summer, we'll see that softness and those rates coming back down a little bit, maybe a little bit higher rate floor than where we were going into that summer months. I certainly think that's possible and likely, and that's what our forecast shows. But, we don't think that sustained disruption is going to occur.
That's a pretty good indicator. Anytime your tender rejections get over 10%, that's kind of really when you go, oh, wait, we're actually doing something here. We're making movements. Especially when I consider anytime rejections kind of get up that point, more than like a week at a time, because you'll have a couple, if you have a long weekend or a holiday, you might see them jump up. But if it stays like that for a few days, then I'm like, oh, we're actually making some meaningful progress here.
Yeah, I think it'll be important, no matter what we see in the data, that we pair that with other information we're collecting out there and really try and, not jump to any conclusions as to where we're at. But certainly a week or two of sustained conditions is enough for us to potentially begin making any decisions that we need to on changing our strategies.
So we've seen we've covered the rate side of things, but one of the things that has been kind of interesting is for kind of I don't know if it's the first time all year, but it seems like the first time in a hot minute is that we've seen new entrants enter the carrier market. So we kind of went from not a lot of new carriers, a lot of them leaving the market, whether that's whatever decision they've made. What do you think is driving the trend of the new entrants in the market?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think some of it just comes down to just understanding how that data point works. And, occasionally you get, jumps in the way that they, these new carrier entrants are processed by FMCSA. And, and that could be in either direction. Sometimes you get jumps in revocations or vice versa. But ultimately, the way that I'm looking at that data from a 1 month blip, let's call it of more new entrants than revocations of authority, is just that we're seeing sort of that really slow pace of exits right now. A lot of the 1 and 2 truck carriers that could have exited or were struggling have. And really what we're talking about now is, potentially new seasonal entrants to the market as we get into this new this time of year where more freight starts to move, whether that's open deck or flatbed. We know this data contains, more than just a for hire market here for trucking. So, but largely speaking, to me, it points out that capacity is exiting slowly. These larger asset carriers are continuing to, as you see in the employment data, add headcount, right? They truly believe they want to be staffed to support any potential market flip and not miss out on the opportunities that are there. And potentially record profits that we saw over the pandemic are enabling them to hold on. And, we'll see, right? I saw Knight-Swift earnings, Thomas Wasson and other FreightWaves. Ryder had something on LinkedIn here just the other day about Knight-Swift, them mentioning the downward pressure we've seen from shippers on rates and, how they're going to have more of their fleet underutilized, right, and more available to support the spot market. Obviously, that's going to be challenging, for them as a fleet to maintain and manage that and that headcount if we don't see a market flip here this summer. So it'll be interesting to see what employment does if we do go through summer peak season here and we don't see that flip, if we start to see some of these carriers or assets take a step back from that longer term strategy.
I think that's pretty spot on. The enterprise carriers are kind of what I like to think of, if they are struggling, I can only imagine how bad it is for those small to medium sized carriers, because typically your enterprise carriers, they have enough of kind of like, I don't want to say savings, but like enough to kind of fall back on that, they'll make it through okay. But if you're small to medium sized, like 10 driver carrier, that's where it's like, ooh, if the big guys are struggling, then it's only going to get worse for those medium to small carriers, which is very unfortunate. But it's just the environment that we're in right now, unfortunately. So, sorry, Aaron, cut this board out. I looked at the wrong question. All right. So one of my favorite things that has been happening right now, because also mostly it ties into the sustainability side of things, but we won't get into that part of it. That has been the Panama Canal. So we have seen a lot of freight flock back to the West Coast after everybody panicked and went to the East Coast and everyone's back out West. The Panama Canal is starting to allow more ships per day through because they have hit the end of their dry drought season, which, you know, we love rain. But do you see, so we've had the increase of imports. Do you see the increase in ships being able to come through the Panama Canal affecting much of the imports, you know, kind of down in Texas and in the Southeast? Or do you see most of the import volume strongly returning to the West Coast?
Yeah, I think it depends on what type of commodity you're talking about, right? I think a lot of what was going through the Panama Canal is that bulk or bulk aggregate or other commodities of that sort. You know, retail is still going to be coming into the West Coast and assuming from Asia, from China, still going to be coming into the West Coast. And what we're seeing is there's still plenty of capacity on the West Coast to support that. So until we start to see any meaningful backup or delay out West, I wouldn't expect to see any meaningful ship of any shift of any type of freight that's, you know, more over the road, you know, loaded in a van, moving to the Eastern Gulf Coast ports as a result of the canal opening. I think more than anything, what that's preventing is a backup on the West Coast with some of these commodities and materials that, you know, they may have limited capacity to support. So if anything, this just relieves a little bit of the pressure on the West Coast from some of that. And you know, I think gives a little bit more breathing room there. But largely speaking, I think it was always kind of a minimal impact, but something that shippers had to take into account. And now with that out of the way, shippers have plenty to worry about in the Red Sea and anything coming around the other side.
I think that minimal impact is kind of funny because it's one of those where it's like we finally got everything ironed out. It's ready to go. And then Panama Canal stops letting certain like they have like certain amount per day that you go through. And you're like, son of a gun, I just got everything figured out. And now this is just like, it's not necessarily the end of the world. It's just another inconvenience. And dang it, I just got this figured out. So I feel like there has to be a lot of shippers just kind of breathing a nice sigh of relief of, okay, we can carry on with business as normal. And I'm not going to have to say, maybe my ship gets through today, maybe it gets through tomorrow. I think that that's going to be a nice little bit of relief heading into the summer here for some of those shippers.
I mean, what a year it's been for to be in global ocean trade and ocean shipping. I think hit after hit after hit and complexity after complexity, you know, whether that's what we're seeing in the Red Sea, the Panama Canal, and unfortunately, you know, the tragic events in Baltimore, right? All these curveballs that are being thrown at shippers with global trade. Yet, have we seen any of those events have a massive impact? We really haven't, you know, to some degree, short-term impact. But those impacts are quickly absorbed. I think, you know, those types of challenges and those types of events occurring, not causing global disruption to a larger degree is even more of an indicator that, you know, we're not in a super sensitive environment or super sensitive market, even with all that, those happenings.
Yeah, I think that was, it's been very fortunate, like you said, that it has been a slower kind of market. And there has been all that excess capacity that people have been able to snatch up more or less, because I could only imagine how if it was back in, you know, 2021 and we had all these disruptions, how bad it would be and how just things would just not move for a long time. So, but thankfully we're not in that market, but thankfully we are coming towards the end of the show. And, David, we have an age old question for you today. Are you ready for it?
All right.
Would you rather fight one horse sized duck or 100 duck sized horses?
I just, you know, the questions that we're getting to in the list, we're really scratching the bottom of the barrel here. This question is so hard to answer, you know, but I think 100 duck-sized horses is probably more intimidating to me, right? Because you got to take on 100. Okay, yes, individually you can take one out, but at least with like one like horse-sized duck, albeit, you know, ducks are pretty fierce. At least there's only one enemy I'm facing here. I think I'd probably rather take that scenario.
I think so. I think also the only thing that could make the duck-sized horses is like if you had loud noises, because horses like spook easy. I think you could do that, but I think you might have made the right call. Although ducks are ferocious, I've literally watched ducks and geese attack people and get beaten with lunchboxes at one of the old offices I worked at. But yeah, I think you made a right call. But there's a follow-up question to this question, and it is something that I have learned that most guys in the world have a list of animals that they think that they could defeat. So the follow-up is, after you beat the horse-sized duck, do you think you could win against a gorilla? Like a normal-sized gorilla. Do you think you could fight a gorilla and win?
Oh, the obvious answer is no. And I don't think I would stand a chance. I don't think any man would stand a chance against an average size gorilla. Although I'm an animal lover, okay? I'll be clear, I don't want to fight any animals, okay, Mary?
Don't worry, PETA's not coming for you.
Okay, all right.
I like it. I love that. That's I have learned that there's a lot of people out there with a lot of confidence thinking that they could in fact beat a gorilla. And to that I say, don't try. So if anyone wants to reach out and get your hot takes on other animals that you could potentially go up against, or more importantly, where they can get any insights into the market, where can they find you outside the show?
Yeah, well, arrivelogistics.com, you can navigate to our insights page, is where we publish all of our market content. It's all available free. And then I'm pretty active on LinkedIn as well. So you follow Arrive Logistics or myself on LinkedIn, and you'll be notified every time we're releasing some of that content that we do on a regular basis. And just as a little preview, we'll be providing an updated 2024 forecast here in the next couple of weeks, following up on our beginning of the year forecast. And so, we'll be publishing our views on what we expect for the rest of the year and into early next year here in just a few weeks.
I absolutely love that. We'll have to have you back to talk about how your forecast in January matches your forecast now. I'm excited to get into that. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Find Chat Call the Podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, like Apple Podcast and Spotify. Don't forget to check out all the other incredible FreightWaves shows. And don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter on freightwaves.com/checkcall. See you on the internet.